It is Wednesday, November 13th for Patreon subscribers. It's Thursday, November 14th for the rest of yous. As always, check us out on Patreon if you want to subscribe. It's going to be revamped November 1st and going to offer way more for our subscribers because we appreciate you. So check that out. And then also, if you're interested in the tailgate tickets, November 23rd, 8 a.m., right next to Varsity Club. For the Penn State game, Patreon subscribers get a discount, so check that out, and come hang out with us. Come watch the game if you don't have tickets, or if you do, come tailgate with us. But a huge episode today, really fired up about it. Going to talk about some of the matchups, going to talk about the playoff rankings, Chase Young, and then have an interview with an Alabama insider, Simone Eli from Birmingham, a news sports anchor. Really excited about it, so let's get to the show.
That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage, and the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
All right, welcome to Menace to Society, episode, 45. Welcome, the college football show. Before we get started, want to mention we have a number of things to discuss, and we'll hit most of them at the end of the show, but we have our tailgate is kicking off November 23rd, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. minimally. I mean, it might go a little longer than that, but it's $50 a ticket. Go online and get them now on our website. We have food coming from Shade on the Canal, Giant Eagle. We have Buckeye Vodka is going to provide vodka, or not provide vodka, but they're going to sponsor the event. And then Rogue Brewery is going to have some beer there. And we have a number of other sponsors and some partners we're working out. So it's going to be legit. It's going to be a really good time. It's a covered lot on the corner of Lane and Tuller. Or Tuttle, whatever it is, right next to Varsity Club.
Yeah.
And it's going to be heated. We're going to buy some heaters, some legit heaters to heat it up. So anyways, TVs, the whole deal. So check it out. But first things first is I apologize for the audio quality from last show. And I got to tell you, I know what it sounded like. And if you had any idea how much work the audio technician or the audio tech took to try to fix that audio, if you could have heard it beforehand, it was one of those situations where I knew that people wanted to hear the episode, wanted to put it out. The minute it was done, it was like, I listened to a little bit of it and I was like, oh no. Like, do we really want to go back and record that whole episode again? Yeah. And here's what happened. So I have a two-year-old and brought her in studio. We were hanging out. She was alone in the studio for maybe 60 seconds, but she loves lights and buttons. And so she has done this a number of times. Whenever she's been in the studio with me, she's pressed buttons, knobs, all that. It's always been easy to identify when we do a sound check because the levels are off. She is like a boss baby. If you've ever
seen, sure.
She knew what she was doing. She said, all right, listen here, buddy. You caught it every time. I know how to fix this. So she turned all the audio levels up on every microphone, which normally easy find. Start to do a sound check and the levels are crazy high and you're like, oh man, she messed with it. No. She muted one microphone, my microphone. So as I started a sound check, the other mics were so high sensitivity that they caught my volume of my voice and it was perfect, the perfect level for if it was set up normal. And because of that, I was minimally 10 feet away from the live mic. But anyways, far too much conversation.
So if you need a two-year-old tech guru, we got one for you.
Yeah, she will sabotage everything. But anyways, I think biggest news right now, current events, is Chase Young, as predicted by everyone outside of Kirk Herbstreit and ESPN, because Kirk Herbstreit, as we mentioned on the dumbass announcer segment that has not yet been named, predicted four games. It was going to be four games. That's like four games, and then yelled at everyone on Twitter that uninformed people are saying four games, outside of the fact that he's the one that said four games.
Yeah, well, I loved his tweet today after it got announced.
Right.
It was four, and then it was
predicted. But Chase Young, two games. And to be honest with you, It. I mean, I wouldn't even say it's a penalty. It's like, hey, you get to rest the best player in college football for two irrelevant games and get him ultra healthy, ultra explosive for the 3-game stretch to make the playoffs. You couldn't ask for a better situation.
Yeah.
And so the one thing I do want to clear up is, I'm not going to digress on anything that I reported, but the simple reality of what I was trying to get across is two things. One is rumors are the devil, and the unwavered rumor was that Mike Locksley and Elijah Brooks, his former high school coach, were the snitches in this whole thing. They created it. They did it. They were pissed, whatever. And that's what started it all. That is 100% without basis, and that's not true. That is 100% not true. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I reported was that when I investigated if that was true, because I knew it wasn't, I know both those people, and I know that Mike Locksley would never snitch on anyone. You could break the rules blatantly and he would be like, that's screwed up and you're going to get yours, but he would not turn you in. That's not how he operates. And Elijah Brooks is a great person, great coach, and probably cares about Chase Young a lot. And he, from what my experience of recruiting his school, would never do that to one of his former players.
Yeah.
So that's when I started investigating it. And as I reported, all inclination in the Maryland area, the DC Maryland area, PG County, where Chase is from, that whole area, everyone is like, what? Yeah. That's the last person it was. No mm-hmm. chance it was him. But let me tell you who we're hearing it was. And I said it, three different high school coach mm-hmm. sources said, I'd look at James Franklin because everything we hear is he is the one that didn't want to play Chase. And so he thought he could get him deemed ineligible. And this is pre-Minnesota loss.
That's insane that he would do that.
Here's what I saw. Two things that I saw. And one is a former Buckeye who took some video of Keandre Jones after the game saying, I'll use a snitch. Like, that's what the Buckeye players were saying to him. And he took it and ran with it.
But let me explain that. And here's what they meant. Use a snitch because he used to be a Buckeye and knows all of them, knows their program. And so he's now on Maryland. And so he was probably like telling people like, oh, they do this or this is what they do. Yeah. It had nothing to do with Chase Young.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Let me tell you, if they actually believed Keandre Jones was the one that blew the whistle on Chase Young, they wouldn't be hanging out with him taking pictures after the game.
There was like 30 people trying to get in the picture. No. And I outlined it on the show yesterday or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And Keandre Jones was one of the most liked and still one of the best friends of all those kids.
Yeah.
There's not a chance in hell he had any involvement. But to that point, they were calling him snitch, having fun with him the fact that he told Maryland coaches and teammates like what they do at Ohio State. Like it was just a fun interaction.
No, and but players came out afterwards on Twitter and were like, man, you don't even know. Like that's just us playing around.
But people ran with it.
Oh, absolutely. But the other thing was, if it was Isaiah Brooks that was the one that blew the... Elijah Brooks. If it was him, that would just ruin Maryland's recruiting in that area.
Yeah,
like that just is, that's not even fathomable.
That's what I detailed yesterday. I mean, there's not a chance in hell that not only would Locksley or Elijah Brooks do that, they would not do that regardless, but they certainly wouldn't burn bridges for the only chance they have to build back up the Maryland program. There's not a chance. So anyways, just wanted to clarify I certainly don't have any concrete facts. I don't have an audio recording of James Franklin calling the NCAA, but I'm just reporting what's on the streets of Maryland because so many people, especially in Buckeye Nation, we were freaking out that Locksley and Elijah Brooks were the ones that did it. I get it. There was some kind of direct correlation between the three, but that's certainly not the case. So that was the whole point of it. Run with it as you may. I don't really care. I don't know James Franklin well enough to care, but that's the rumor mill. If you want to report real rumors, the rumor, which is unbiased and unproven, is that James Franklin did it. Yeah. Point blank.
Well, and the bottom line is he's back after Rutgers.
And that's the best part.
That's
the best part is if it is actually true.
What a middle finger.
Oh man, you just rested up and pissed off the best player in college football. That was smart.
Yeah.
But all right, I just wanted to retouch on that before we moved on, but just because I guess it's relevant, and apparently I said something that people ran with. But Here's what I really want to talk about. Before we get into them, we're going to talk a couple matchups. Baylor-Oklahoma is my game of the week. I'm really excited for. Georgia-Auburn is a huge game. Wake Forest-Clemson's not a huge game, but it's really Clemson's
their only game.
Yeah. It's their one chance to lose a game.
Only game on the schedule.
Yeah, and then we are going to have a Bama insider, and really excited about it because she is a Bowling Green Falcon. An Ohio native that is now the sports anchor in Birmingham at probably the biggest news station down there with so much insight. So make sure you stay tuned for that. At the end of the episode, we're going to bring Simone Eli on for a little insight from Alabama country. But before we do, let's talk about this college football playoff ranking.
Do we really have to?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, it's relevant.
It's just
it's relevant.
Well, we do for a number of reasons because I have some things that I... First of all, I predicted the top five, really. They were not my rankings, but I said that this is what the playoff committee would do. If you listen to the last episode, outside of the echo, you're going to hear that I said it would be LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, and then I said I think they're going to put Georgia at 4, Bama at 5, and then Oregon at 6. That's what I thought they would do, and they sure did. And here's why I don't disagree with it. Because every SEC team we just mentioned, LSU, Georgia, Alabama, the one thing Georgia has that the other two don't is a good defense.
Yeah.
They're the only team out of the three that has a good defense. Now, you talk about the two best defenses in the country, probably Ohio State, then Clemson.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's all the rankings, too, say that. So,
but Georgia at 4, I am on both sides of the argument here. They lost to South Carolina. They don't have a playmaker on offense outside of DeAndre Swift and Lawrence Cager, who I love, who's my guy, and their quarterback is above average. I know all the flaws.
So that's what I was going to say. They have the worst loss in the top, I don't know, 13, 14 maybe.
But here's my point. If anyone is going to beat Ohio State and Clemson right now, because people are holding Clemson's first month and a half of football against them. They really are. If you watch Clemson the last three games,
they've turned on.
They've been really good the past 3 weeks, for sure.
It's them, Ohio State, and LSU. Those are only three teams in the country that are playing like this, and LSU's defense is so suspect. The other two, there's no suspicion on either side of the ball. There's not. Now, Clemson struggled early, but we even brought on Anna Hickey to talk about the feeling inside Clemson, and I knew what was going on. They said, we're going to play average teams all year. We want Trevor Lawrence to be the best quarterback in college football at the end of the year, so we're going to throw everything at him. And there was a growth curve. There was it was a process.
Well, and
you're watching the results of it now.
And also, there's such thing as a championship hangover.
That too. That's a fact.
They won the national title last year and came into this year knowing they face nobody all year long.
That's a point, and you bring up a great point. I didn't even think to talk about that, but after we won it all in 2014, oh my gosh, players are throwing out first pitches at the Indians, throwing out first pitches at the Reds. I mean, you're going to the White House. You're doing so much stuff that distracts you from what you're trying to accomplish again. That's a great point. But I'll tell you this, outside of that, this is, again, a great point. But here's my issue, and I don't know that we've had such great evidence of the bias, the SEC bias, by the committee, driven by ESPN. I don't know that there's been a greater case for that other than this release.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, it's not even just at the top, which the top is the biggest marker of it because there's three top five teams that are the SEC. But even when you scroll through, you notice it.
Well, I think the biggest evidence of it is this. There's an undefeated Baylor team, and I'm not here to argue.
Yes.
It's going to be the two loss Florida and Auburn, correct?
Well, I'm not going to be here to sit here and argue that Baylor has played a crazy schedule, but they have not lost yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a two-game stretch coming up that is going to be critical to them becoming relevant. But and I'm not even saying they shouldn't be ranked behind some teams that with losses. That will yet to be seen. But the manner in which they are is so biased-based. It's unbelievable.
It's unreal.
There's two loss teams ranked ahead of them, Auburn and Florida, SEC teams, and three two-loss teams directly behind them.
Yeah.
Wisconsin and Michigan, Big Ten teams, and Notre Dame, Midwest team.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that they're ranked below Florida and Auburn is shocking. I think, well, personally,
it's not shocking.
Well,
it's would happen that way.
I would love to hear the justification of something that doesn't include, well, they lost to Florida and they lost to this team and like.
Well, and here's my other issue. So that's my biggest issue is either you're going to say those four teams, because those four teams have played tougher teams than Baylor, so put them all four ahead of them, or put Baylor ahead of all of them because they've lost none. Which mm-hmm. is the more realistic approach.
That's what I, yeah.
And my other issue is why, it's a twofold issue. Mm-hmm. Why is Texas ranked with three losses? Right. I mean, you talk about they lost to unranked TCU, they lost to LSU.
You want to know why? Yeah.
And Oklahoma and beat Kansas by two on a last second field goal.
It's because that LSU played them, beat them, and they want that to look good still.
That's a fact.
That's 100% why they're ranked.
Here's my biggest issue on the whole thing. And this is my biggest issue. How is Indiana unranked?
Yeah.
A two-loss Indiana, one of them being to Ohio State, and they didn't play poorly against Ohio State. You mean to tell me that Indiana is not better than Kansas State?
There's 4 3-loss teams in the top 25.
And Indiana is essentially 7-1 plus an Ohio State loss.
Yeah, which is just...
Which is obvious. Okay. That's going to happen, right?
Yeah, that's outrageous. And the Baylor thing, I can't get past it because it's... You ask Robert Mullen, right? The guy from the committee. He's supposed to explain it all, right? And you have Florida lost to Georgia and LSU. Okay, let's say that those they're top four teams. You can put them ahead. But then Auburn lost to LSU and Florida, which is obviously better than not losing any games. Yep. And then you ask him, okay, so those two-loss teams are better than Baylor, but... What? How do you view Oklahoma's schedule against Baylor's? And he goes, well, they've played a similar schedule.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, they've played a similar schedule, but Oklahoma lost a game, yet Baylor's still ranked below them?
I mean, if we're and it goes back to the whole conversation about what do they value? Is it how bad are the losses? How strong are the wins? Because there's two teams in the top 10 that have had crazy quality wins, and that is LSU 1, Minnesota 2.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up Minnesota.
The committee ranked Penn State the fourth best team in the country, whatever their basis is, their mm-hmm. analytics yeah. are.
And that was them.
And Minnesota beat them. So Minnesota and LSU are the only two that have beat super quality opponents, right?
Top four teams.
Right.
I don't understand that. But how do you not put them at three or at worst four?
Well, I knew they wouldn't.
I know that too, but I'm just saying resume is there.
It's because the reality
zero
is this.
On the loss column.
The reality is this, and this is my opinion. They're basing all of this off of decent intelligence on football. They watch mm-hmm. these teams, and that's why I said they'd put Georgia at four, because Georgia has a solid defense, and if they get their offensive skill playing better, they might be the fourth best team in the country. Now, they haven't done that yet, and that's why that... They put Alabama at five. That's why Minnesota's at eight, because they believe that Minnesota is at worst is going to get beat pretty handily by Ohio State. Well, and
they have it both ways though, because if it's only eye test, then why is Ohio State below LSU?
Because LSU has proven it.
No, yeah,
no, but I'm just saying there are
only
more...
eye test.
My point
apparently.
Is, but right now I don't know that if you watched film. I don't know that you could argue that LSU doesn't have a stronger case to be one and that Georgia doesn't have a stronger case to be four over Alabama on film, just watching film. Mm-hmm. Never mind the how bad the loss is or how good the wins are. I just mean Georgia has a better defense than Alabama. That's not debatable. But that's not to say that the bias isn't real. It is very, very real, obviously.
Well, yeah, and here's I think if we've learned anything over the last 6 years of this committee, it's that they have a different criteria for each team. They look each team individually. They don't have a set criteria. Better wins doesn't necessarily negate bad losses, but sometimes it does. The strength of schedule only matters if they look good. I mean, it doesn't matter. When you look at the ranking, it doesn't matter. They're going to pick whatever team they think is best. The criteria means nothing.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah. That's a fact. We could talk about the rankings for two full shows.
I'd like to talk more about Minnesota.
Well, I'm sure you would.
They're my favorite team.
Well, they can row their boat.
To talk about right now.
They can row their boat down to Clemson and get their ass beat by 40, as Rex Ryan said.
All right, Rex.
But all right, we're gonna get back and talk about the three national games of the week and really the one game of the week here after a message from one of our sponsors. And also we have Simone Eli from Birmingham. She's a sports anchor from Birmingham, Alabama, to give us some Alabama insight.
Do you have to have that accent when you say Birmingham?
Did I?
Birmingham.
I didn't hear it. maybe it's natural. But
it is natural.
Anyways, we'll be right back after a message from one of our sponsors. Are you tired of paying your bookie every weekend because your quote-unquote lock of the week is as reliable as a Jim Harbaugh game plan? What if you could leverage an algorithm and data analytics group who has consistently predicted results for the last 4 years with over a 60% documented success rate? The guys at PromAthletics.com have done just that and want to get you in on the action. With 100% validation and transparency, their proprietary quantitative analysis has resulted in them being the only handicapping group in the world to finish in the top 100 the last 3 years in the Las Vegas Super Contest, the globe's largest handicapping competition. Take the guesswork out of getting your weekend slate of games selected with the purchase of an NFL or college football package. This last weekend, they went 6-2 on college football, 3-2 in the NFL against the spread, and good for 9-4 overall. Use code MENACE for 25% off any weekly, monthly, or full season package and start winning today. Again, code MENACE for 25% off any package at promathletics.com. Don't let another losing weekend get the best of your wallet. Head to pro, as in P-R-O, mathletics.com. To start winning today. Check out our social media as we will promote PromAthletics and also share their link to get that code within the next couple of days. But definitely check them out. It is the premier analytics site when it comes to gambling and spreads. All right, well, I think there's two big games this weekend, and there's a third, and it's only even a decent game because it's Clemson's only chance to lose before the playoffs. But the game I'm most excited for is Baylor Oklahoma. Oklahoma goes into Baylor, goes to Waco, and I'm really excited to see how real Baylor is.
Didn't you call this the upset before the season?
Yeah, but I've said it all year. Yeah. I mainly said it about Texas, but
I think
Baylor will beat Texas. I'm worried about Baylor against Oklahoma.
That makes more sense. Yeah,
but. But here's what the Menace analytics say. Baylor has a major, major advantage when they're on offense in regular down and distance scenarios. I'm talking about 40-spot ranking difference. Mm-hmm. Just their pass efficiency and rushing average. I mean, because Oklahoma's been so poor on defense in first and second down, and that is the stat of the day. And the concerning thing for Oklahoma is when you flip sides – Oklahoma, obviously, they have an explosive offense with Jalen Hurts and the whole gamut that they have in Norman.
Yep.
But they only have a 6-spot advantage over Baylor on first and second down, normal situation offense defense.
Mm-hmm.
So it is farly, farly favored in Baylor's favor.
Yeah, but when I look at it, I do see that Oklahoma has a decent advantage in critical downs, though.
Critical downs when they're on offense. And I think that's because Jalen Hurts does such a good job on
third down, not only
throwing the ball somewhat efficiently, but also, you know, scrambling for a first down. And mm-hmm. so that's going to be the key situation to watch. The key situation to watch is going to be Baylor on defense on third down against Jalen Hurts.
Yep.
What if they can somehow manage to be successful on third down defense in Baylor, they're going to win the game. And what this is this is the top two graded overall teams in the Big 12 on Pro Football Focus.
Wow.
Oklahoma's one, Baylor's two, as far as complete grades. My favorite part is it's the best graded offense in Oklahoma versus the best graded defense in Baylor. So for the first time all year, Oklahoma might actually have a test on defense. And so we know that Oklahoma's defense is suspect.
Yeah.
It'll be a matter of, can their offense perform the way they have against a better quality defense?
Yeah. Well, right. Essentially, what you're talking about is it's strength on strength, right?
It is strength
Baylor's
on strength.
Baylor's defense is their strength. Oklahoma's offense is their strength.
And so it's strength on strength, and I wouldn't call Baylor's defense a weakness at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely their strength, but it's going to be more when Baylor's on offense, how mismatched is that?
Yep.
And it's the two top two quarterbacks in the Big 12 as far as QB rating, Jalen Hurts and Charlie Brewer. It's going to be a big matchup. I'll tell you this: my greatest concern for Baylor, and you all know what I'm going to get at here, is tackling.
Missed tackling.
Missed tackles.
They're averaging double digit tackles on the year. They're averaging over 11 missed tackles a game, and Oklahoma has 40 less missed tackles on the year.
Well, wait, wow. They're 9-0 and they average over double digits. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I know, I get it. It doesn't make sense in games like this. I mean, they've only played one ranked opponent in Oklahoma State. They won by 18.
Yeah.
So this will be their first true test, but tackling, I'm telling you, is an indication of everything. I think Oklahoma's going to win this game, and I still think Baylor goes on to beat Texas. I think they have a rematch in the Big 12 championship game, but I think Oklahoma wins this game now.
I could see this being one of those games that is whoever has the ball last kind of games.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, it's going to be, I'll tell you, it's one of the hardest games to handicap and pick that really I've looked into all year, mainly because Baylor hasn't played anyone great. I still love what they do. I love Matt Rhule. I love their program. I love what they have going. This is obviously their biggest test. And I think it's more of a test, even if Oklahoma wins, to say, all right, how's your offense going to do against a better defense?
Yeah.
Because if they're going to make any type of statement or any type of run at any potential chance at a playoff, it's got to be in this game. And so I like Oklahoma to win. I do, even though it's at Baylor. But it's probably my least favorite pick I've had to date.
Well, geez, look what Matt Rhule did with this Baylor team. I mean, it was not too long ago that they had like a few wins because of all the whatever they are, the sanctions and all that. But I mean, 9-0 for Baylor now.
Yeah, this program was lucky enough to meet the death penalty.
Yeah, it's not going to diminish what Matt Rhule's done at Baylor.
No, not at all.
Like I predicted, I think he'll be at Penn State within the next 2-3 years.
Oh, boy.
But as it pertains to this game, I think Baylor's got their hands full, and I like Oklahoma to win. But I will be rooting for Baylor. Yeah. I want Baylor to win.
I'm going with my guy, Matt Rhule. He's going to get it done. 10-0. Here we go. Let's go. Let's go, Bears.
I hope so. And I'll tell you, before we get to the last game, and we're only going to talk about this for a brief moment because it's really the only Clemson game that there's a chance that they might have a game on their hands.
Before we start, Clemson covers. Okay, that's my prediction.
Well,
okay.
I will tell you this: Clemson's playing the best football they've played all year. The last 3 weeks, they've shown me more than they've shown in the previous however many weeks. And I think Clemson's had a solid defense, one of the top five defenses in the country all year. And the problem for the rest of the country, and specifically the rest of the miserable ACC, is Trevor Lawrence and that offense are hitting stride.
They're figuring it out.
And it's a 30 position difference in every analytic that we have on our Menace analytics. And I don't think it's going to be close, but I'm mostly excited to see how they handle third down, because Wake Forest doesn't do a lot of things excellent, but they're a top 25 third down defense. And I think that is going to be the test. If Clemson can walk out of there performing well on third down passing scenarios, you're going to say, all right, Clemson is for real. Let's let them finish out this miserable schedule. Yeah. And then let's see what happens in the playoffs.
Well, you know, in Wake Forest's favor, they're only 29 spots worse in critical downs on defense. So, you know, that's something.
Yeah, it's definitely something. But
something.
The game that I'm really excited about is Auburn at Georgia. I think this is the game that is going to tell a lot, because I love Auburn's defense and I love Georgia's defense. I think Georgia has the best defense in the SEC. Mm-hmm. And if you look at all the analytics, Auburn has the edge in everything except for critical down and distance when Auburn is on defense. I mean, it is legitimately going to come down to, can Georgia outperform Auburn on defense? It's a defensive battle. I think Jake Fromm is a little better than Bo Nix. I think that the skill is very similar. I think Georgia has a better running back. Georgia has one receiver that might be slightly better. I think Lawrence Cager is slightly better than the skill on the perimeter at Auburn, but those two defenses are salty.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a defensive game, and I think it'll just come down to it's at Auburn, you know.
It is at Auburn, which is a huge factor. But the number two scoring defense in the country is coming from Athens, Georgia.
Yeah.
And this Auburn offense is leaves a lot to...
Bo Nix is getting better, but I'm with you.
Here's the bottom line when I look at this game. It's Jake Fromm, okay? He is an experienced quarterback. He's played in big games. He's won big games. Bo Nix is a freshman and is going against a huge defense in Georgia. That's the difference for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think Georgia wins the game on the road, and I think that's when this whole thing becomes a mess because they're going to treat it like a big-time win, even though it is just a normal win.
Yeah, that's true.
And
yeah.
That's when Georgia starts to cement themselves as a top-four team. And I do think Georgia wins. I think all the analytics point that way. And from what I've seen on film, their defense is that good. And they're, like you said, their quarterback and offensive skill are slightly better than Auburn. So I don't think this is a questionable game. I don't think it's like the Oklahoma-Baylor game where I had to pick one, but I don't know which way to lean. Yeah. But so I'm taking Georgia in this game. I think they'll win the game. I think they will prove that they are at least worthy of the conversation. I think it's premature to put them in a top four because of how bad their loss was. But the good thing is I don't think it's going to matter because when they get to the SEC championship game, they get a second loss, then they're going to be out of the conversation. But I do think Georgia wins this game, and I think Auburn – continues to be what I said they were preseason.
A four-loss team.
I actually think Auburn will win this game. And here's why. Because they play Alabama at the end of the year, and they're going to want Alabama in that top four.
Who's they? The refs?
No, yeah. ESPN.
Conspiracy theory over here.
So you think the refs are going to will a win for Auburn?
Yep, I do.
Okay. Well, there's your take. but anyways, we want to get to this interview with Simone Eli because I was really excited about this interview because it is it's a chance to get a different perspective for us up here in the Midwest, for us Big Ten guys or people that are viewing Alabama from a distance. And she was the sports anchor for a Birmingham news station. So let's get to Simone Eli's interview right now. Well, we are back in studio, Menace to Society, with Simone Eli from CBS 42 in Birmingham, the sports anchor, an insider of Alabama football. Going to give us some perspective into, I guess, the mentality down south and specifically in the Nick Saban Alabama camp. So thanks for joining us, Simone.
Hey, absolutely. I'm excited. And what a week to be able to talk to you.
And maybe more importantly, an Ohio surplant in Alabama and a former Falcon, a Bowling Green grad basketball player.
Yeah, I didn't play very much. And people say that all the time. They're like, you played Division I basketball. And I'm like, well, I mean, I was on the bench and they paid for my school. So I technically, yes, I did play at Bowling Green, but I didn't see the floor very often.
Yeah, well, I can definitely relate. I tell people ask me all the time, did you play for Urban Meyer at Bowling Green? I'm like, well, I wouldn't say play. I mean, I was a preferred walk-on. I had a helmet on when he was coaching, but to say I played for Urban Meyer would be a little bit of a farce. But here's what I really want to know, Simone. What is the feeling right now in Alabama, in the Nick Saban camp, within really SEC country after this weekend and after the turn of events and the result from the LSU-Alabama game? Tell me about the feeling in Alabama.
I would say the feeling is definitely a very disappointed feeling right now because a lot of questions remain on what the future is going to be for Alabama and a lot of uncertainty when it comes to being in the college football playoff. And quite frankly, it's college football playoff or bust down here. It does not matter any other bowl game. Nothing else matters. You're either playing for a national title or you might as well just hang it up. And that's all there really is to it, especially on that side of the state in Tuscaloosa. So there was a huge disappointment, not only because it was LSU, but because it was at home. Tua wasn't 100%. I think that Nick Saban, he's well aware of the situation that he's in right now. It's one of the first things he said in the post game was, we have been here before. You think back to 2017. I know Buckeye fans know that year all too well. But they've been here before. The problem is, maybe a little bit of different situations and scenarios, and they definitely do not control their own destiny. Bama fans like to have control. They don't have that right now, so a little bit of disappointment going on right now in Tuscaloosa.
Well, I can't imagine that Nick Saban himself, knowing him, that he would not be disappointed with a loss regardless of what the situation is. But it definitely raised some concerns, and I know that the college football playoff rankings came out, and it's it seems like Bama is the first team in. I know that Georgia was ranked 4, but there's an obvious matchup with LSU. And if LSU handles business, Alabama looks to slide themselves right back in the playoff, which ultimately is all that mattered. What is the perspective from down there of the national landscape, specifically Ohio State and some of these other teams that are now in the playoff out and with Bama sitting outside?
Yeah, I think that one thing about SEC land is that they drink what's called, you know, the SEC Kool-Aid. Okay, myself, I'm from Ohio. I moved down here and I started drinking the SEC Kool-Aid. And it's like, hey, we're the best conference. And then there's everybody else, including the Big Ten. And so I think that the SEC, Alabama fans, LSU fans still have this prove it to me mentality. Yes, Ohio State's won. They did it under Urban. They've done it multiple years, national title. But it's still like, hey, it's the SEC and everybody else. Again, that's just the mentality that it is down here. I think some people were trying to argue, oh, Ohio State should still be number one in the college football playoff. But after LSU beat Bama, the belief down here is LSU is the best team in the country and the SEC is the best conference in the country. And then there's everybody else. And until someone, Ohio State or otherwise, prove them differently, that's going to be their belief. And it's stubborn as they come, but that's how the folks down here in the South are, honestly.
Oh, that's not uncommon this year. That's been
for sure.
That has been the mantra down there since I was there. I mean, back in the 2005, 2010, that during that tenure. So it's definitely a Kool-Aid, and I think it's in the water. I don't even think you get to choose if you
it's
drink
in the
water. It. You're forced to drink it.
Yeah, it is for sure.
So talk to me about the rest of the regular season, and more specifically, I think the only dangerous game moving forward for Alabama is the Iron Bowl, and not that that's ever not dangerous, but now specifically where they can't afford even a lackluster performance. What is the talk around Auburn, around Bo Nix, around Gus Malzahn, and that whole rivalry and that inevitable end of the year matchup like it is every year?
Yeah, well, when you talk about stubbornness, Gus Malzahn is a stubborn guy, and he'll be the first to admit that. He wants to do things his way, and typically the not very popular way, but he's going to do things his way with Bo Nix. Obviously, they don't have anyone else to go to at this point, but their belief is that we will beat Georgia this week and that we will beat Alabama, at home, and they don't think otherwise. They have a incredible defense, guys who came back four games like this specifically. And again, if anyone believes in Auburn more than Auburn, I would like to see them. That locker room, regardless of the losses they've already taken against LSU and Florida, they believe that they can win. They want to stay in that conversation. Do they have a shot at the playoffs? I think I read like 5% or something like that. It's not going to happen, but they still have a lot to play for. So again, they're not going to go in there and just take their lumps, especially with both of these games being at home.
Yeah, and that's a huge point of contention is having those games at home is going to be huge for them.
Yes.
So my next question is, and it kind of goes off the heels of that, because I really love Auburn's defense. I've been very critical of Bo Nix, not because I don't think he's going to be a good player. I just think he shouldn't be playing. He's too young. He's not ready for that. But that's neither here nor there. I love Auburn's defense. I actually love Georgia's defense. I am and I love Tua. I love the skill at Alabama. My biggest concern as I evaluate the film for Alabama is their defense. They had significant losses before the season, during the season, and they're not playing like the Alabama defense as I've watched really for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. What is the feeling about that defensive unit down there?
Yeah, they're struggling. That's an understatement. But you have to remember back to preseason when they lost both veteran linebackers. So Terrell Lewis, really the only veteran guy in that front seven, because they lost so much talent up there, especially in Dylan Moses. So they're starting a couple true freshmen who have been good at times. But when you have veteran offensive coordinators who say, we're going to attack where you're young, we're going to attack where you're weak, they're able to do that. We saw that with Joe Burrow and LSU, especially the Alabama secondary. I went into that game wanting to see the Alabama secondary prove themselves, because in games previously, there were times where breakdown in communication, there were issues back there. And I was really interested to see, can Joe Burrow pick these guys apart? And they did. For them to go in there and to drop 46 on Alabama at home in that atmosphere is shell-shocking to me. The biggest disappointment should not be with that offense. A lot of people giving crap to Steve Sarkisian and all this. But the bottom line is that defense did not get it done from start to finish. It was an embarrassing performance. Nick Saban knows that they shot themselves in the foot multiple times defensively. And it was like nothing I had ever seen. Chalk it up to them being young. Chalk it up to some freshmen up front. But the secondary, guys who are veteran guys who are going to go to the league and should be getting paid a lot of money someday, looked really, really bad last weekend.
And you know what's crazy? As you say that, I'm sitting here like, I've never envisioned a Nick Saban defense that has not been, a top-flight defense. Yep. But knowing Nick Saban as well as I know him, knowing his background, the fact that the secondary was the weakness is absurd.
I know.
I agree. That has always been their strength. I mean, never has it not been.
I'm not sure I've ever seen Trayvon Diggs look as rough as he looked in that game.
Well,
honestly,
and I was critical of him in the game recap because he's supposed to be one of the top 3-4 corners in the country, and boy, he did not look like a top 25 corner in the country.
He did not. Again, LSU has some talented receivers, but I think there were some routine tackles I could have made out there that just didn't happen.
Well, I will not say that's not true. But he definitely didn't play great. But you know what? It happens every now and then, especially at the corner position. It's interesting just the landscape and how people view Alabama. They feel like, I know outside of the South, having talked to people in the South, is that Alabama's getting that free pass, that Nick Saban pass right now. And I think people forget how dynamic Alabama is at some positions. If you could tell, just give me your opinion of who the most impactful player outside of Tua, a healthy Tua, I think anyone would say it is him. Who's the most impactful player on this team?
That's difficult to say because you got three receivers who are just unbelievable, but I'm going to give it to Najee Harris, because when Najee Harris can run the ball, make plays with his feet, make plays in the air, that guy is unstoppable. I've stood next to him. I've interviewed him. He is a big old dude. He is no joke. And when he can get going, that offense is scary, because not only is Tua making things happen in the air with guys like Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, and the likes, but when he can hand the ball off and trust their backs, like we've seen Alabama do in the past with some of the best to ever do it on the ground, when Najee Harris can get going, he is a playmaker. And when that offensive line can do what Saban asks, which is to finish those blocks, that run game is just incredible when it wants to be. So I'd have to say Najee Harris is probably the most dynamic guy on that team outside of obviously Tua and his talent.
Well, and you know what? I think that's the key player. I mean, whether he is or isn't the most dynamic player on that offense, he needs to be, because with the skill they have on the perimeter and with Tua's ability to throw the ball, if he can be dynamic, that offense becomes unstoppable.
It does.
For sure. All right, one last question, and I'm going to catch you off guard with this, and you might not even know the answer, which is okay. But there was a lot of preseason talk about two guys that I know that were at Alabama last year. And they're both offensive coaches, no longer there. And there was a little spat up here in Big Ten country over who called the plays at Alabama last year between Josh Gattis and Mike Locksley. In your opinion, not what have you heard, just your opinion, who called the plays at Alabama last year?
Mike Locksley. Mike Locksley called the plays. I can look over at the coach's box that sits right next to the press box, and I can tell you that Mike Locksley called the plays last year.
Well, I would say this was preseason chatter, and if anyone's watched Michigan this year, they would probably agree that had to be who called the plays. But it was certainly a Big Ten conversation, because it was
I didn't even know that was a conversation.
Well, that goes to parts of the country, right? Yeah, Josh Gattis came out and talked about he was going to be an efficient play caller because he called the plays at Alabama. And then Mike Locksley came out and was like, whoa, timeout now. I mean, I don't
know. That is not true. That's just not even true. I'm laughing at the thought of that. I'm shocked that I didn't see that. But I'm laughing at the thought of that even being the case. That is not. Listen, I'm not inside. I don't have a headset on during the games, but I'm not blind either.
Yeah, well, just Google it, because it was one of those.
I'm going to.
Being inside the industry and also knowing Mike Locksley really well and interviewing at Alabama and just the whole dynamic, it was like, hold on, I know for a fact that's not true. So
hell no.
But it was a big preseason story. I just wanted some clarity from the Tide country.
Well, that's my thought process on it for sure.
Well, one more question. I didn't plan on this, but talk to me about it's somewhat irrelevant, but not entirely, the Nick Saban, Urban Meyer allure that existed. And now even with it being, I guess, still somewhat of an urban program, that Ohio State Alabama rivalry that doesn't exist, but kind of does.
Yeah, I think that people want to see that matchup. Down here, again, it just all starts with the stubbornness. People literally, it's like Jesus and God, and then Nick Saban is a really, really close up there. Like, people worship that guy, and it's pretty incredible because I know that there was a similar feeling about Urban Meyer. I mean, I know a lot of Ohio State fans, and people just worship the ground that he walked on. And it's unbelievable how much fans can put people that high in their book, but it really does happen. And I think it's fun. I think it would be fun to see that matchup again, the playoffs, if it were to happen. I don't think that it will. But Bama fans want to see that. Bama fans want to prove to the Big Ten and prove to the country, we're the SEC, we're the elite program. And again, I don't think they're going to get the chance to do it, but if they did, fans would be loving it.
Oh, I know. Ohio State fans would too. I think it'd be an awesome, just the storyline and the matchup. But, well, yeah. I really appreciate you coming on. I want to make sure to give you a chance because this show is national for sure, and it's I'm sure that SEC fans know you and can follow you and already do follow you, but other people in the country love to just get perspective from other fan bases. So where can they find you on social media?
For sure, social media, Twitter is SimoneEli_TV. That's pretty much where I'm most active.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, Zach. I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Well, we definitely want to thank Simone for joining us. Really cool to get the perspective from other regions of the country, other conferences, and other fan bases, and especially from people that cover these teams, you know, week in, week out, because they really get an intimate knowledge on what's going on in those programs and really the mentality. And it was cool. We talked to Anna Hickey about Clemson kind of before this explosion that they've had on offense. And she was very telling on as to what was going on in the program, what the narrative was. And now obviously Simone doing the same. That was an awesome interview, really fired up about it. So make sure you follow her, check her out. She's going to definitely be able to give you some insight into Nick Saban and Alabama. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. A little college football playoff talk, a little Chase Young talk, a little games of the week talk, and then obviously that perspective into Alabama. But like I mentioned before, check out our tailgate. Go to our website, get those tickets ASAP. Minimally going to be 3 drink tickets. Hopefully going to be able to just make it an all you can drink within reason event. But we'll let you know more details on that before the end of the week. But they're going to be great food. I mean, going to have some great wings, great donuts, breakfast sandwiches, you know, just kind of do it up right for a noon game, and going to be heated. Most importantly, going to be heated, and it's covered. So really excited about it. So check that out, menacetosocietypodcast.com. If you're interested in advertising, reach out at Zach, Z-A-C-H, at menacetosocietypodcast.com. And we will catch you tomorrow on our Menace to the Midwest show.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere?
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.